Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. One of the services that we provide our podcast subscribers is a portfolio checkup. Steve sets aside some time each month to review retirement portfolios. He does this via Skype and telephone. You send him a copy of your retirement accounts. He asks some questions to help him understand your life situation, and then he can offer some free advice. If you'd like to get in on the schedule, the next date is July 20th. And, of course, the time slots go fast. If that works for you, go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. And now, today's InvestTalk podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is June 30th, 2016. That means it's the last day of the month. It means it's the last day of the quarter as well. So we're going to get the second quarter GDP numbers coming in the next week or two. Now we're here to promote, I'm always here to promote above average investing for the average investor, and I want to improve your decision-making skills. I want to broaden your view of financial landscape. And that can mean money in your pocket if you can do that. So that's the goal here on the show. If you're going to make buy and sell decisions yourself, fundamental analysis is going to be really important. It's vital. It's the number one thing you need to learn. Technical analysis is number two, but fundamental by far is number one. The fundamentals are the numbers derived from the companies you're investing in. Those numbers drive valuations of those companies. And you got to put these numbers in perspective with the competing firms in their same industry. And each industry has its own numbers, its own dynamics, its own benchmarks. So you can't compare apples and oranges. You can't compare a tech company with a food company. It makes no sense. They have different products, different margins, different everything. Now, some sectors, such as commodities and retail, usually have margins in the single digit. Margin meaning profit margins, how much money they make per every dollar they sell. So commodities and retails are usually pretty low, single digit profit margins. And the lack of ability to differentiate a commodity makes it very difficult for them to add to the price. You know, a commodity is a commodity is a commodity. Everybody can do that. Think of a commodity, not just, you know, corn and pork bellies, but also a commodity of anything, like chips. Chips, not food chips. I'm talking about computer chips. Many chips are the same. They dry the same. They could be very commoditized. One chip maker, Intel, no different than another chip maker. You see, so that's what I mean. You got to have a differentiation. What makes that company to allow to charge more money for their product? It's difficult. For instance, you know, Walmart has carried a net margin of about 3-4% forever, for the past 10 years. But Microsoft's net margins are 30% over the same period. So why would you evaluate these two companies as the same? You wouldn't. You wouldn't. So the difference in profitability is going to have really a lot of ramifications when it comes to the ratios, the price-earnings ratios, price-sales ratios. You got to understand the industry that you're in. And this is just one example when comparing companies and industries, you know, across all the landscape of the market, just one example. So when someone calls me up, should I buy Western Digital or should I buy U.S. Steel? One or the other? That's why you'll hear me say, well, what is your goal? Are you looking for, you know, big blue chip, steady dividend payer? Are you looking for growth? Because it automatically produces questions in my mind because they're apples and oranges. You want to buy apples or you want to buy oranges? Well, what's your reason to buy one or the other? Anyways, I won't beat it more into the ground. Do you have questions about fundamental analysis? You can reach me right now at a 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Let's answer a question right now.
Hey guys, this is Bobby from Atlanta, Georgia. Love your show, terrific show. I've been learning a lot since last 2 years while listening to you. Had a question on the Coverdell IRA that I have for my daughter who's 2 years old. My question is, what can I buy by the funds in that account? So if she turns, like, let's say 5 years and she wants a laptop, can I use the funds in that account to buy her a laptop? I'm trying to figure out what all can I use that money for towards her education. I would love to hear the answer on the next show. And again, it's a great show. Love it a lot. Thank you. Bye.
I know the Coverdell has a lot more latitude to it than the 529. These are both educational investment vehicles. And the Coverdell, I believe, will allow you to buy that laptop for the child because you can justify that that's for education. Now, I don't know all the really specific rules, so don't get carried away. You're going to have to find out from someone who knows more about Coverdells than I do. But my understanding is, in a Coverdell, you can buy anything long as it's for educational purpose for the child. For the beneficiary, that child. Anything for educational purposes. You know, it could be, you got to be careful because some people think they can justify anything for educational purposes, and that's not the case. But a computer that the kid uses because of school, I think that very easily justifiable. So that would be my answer. I think, yes, you could do that. Now, let's also try to answer a question sent to us by text format. You can text me, Love the show. I'm looking for a good entry point into Google. I think it is starting to be attracted below 700. Also, what are your thoughts about Google's balance sheet? I like Google. I think Google is going to be, a huge company. It already is, as we all know. And, for me, I cannot just pull up the balance sheet and tell you, oh, this is what the balance sheet looks like. It's not possible with the time I have. So I can't tell you how good or bad the balance sheet is. I can tell you this, they have very little debt. So the balance sheet is probably pretty darn healthy. I don't know how much money they have on hand. Cash, I don't. Now, everybody knows who Google is. You've got Google or Google L. I don't know which one you want me to look at. Google L is Alphabet. It's not Google anymore. It's Alphabet. They're going to make $39.61. That's 18% increase next year. This year, they're going to have a 14% increase from last year. It's a $692 stock selling for $39. I mean, that earning of $39, that makes the stock much more reasonable than it has in the past. Now, its five-year range has been 19 to 26, so it hasn't been that much. So at $39.61, it's going to be at the low of that range. So I think you're right. That might be a buying opportunity. The stock has done nothing since December. It's down from December's high, but not down a lot, but it's down. So, the 200-day moving average I have is right around $709 or so. I'd probably wait till it broke above that to make sure that we're kind of moving in the right direction. The technical analysis tells me that it's just, it's trying to find support right where it is, around the 660 to 680, and it's now 692. So this might be an entry point right here, and I would step lightly into it, though. I wouldn't jump into it. In other words, maybe buy half a position, not the whole position, and see if we get a pullback that would give you a better entry point. That would be my suggestion. I like Google a lot, though. I do. Many investors looking for something different look to real estate investment. And you can do that with REITs, real estate investment trusts. But then the options can get pretty confusing. REITs, real estate investment trusts. That's our main talking point today. Also, commodities in 2016. Do you know how they're doing this year? They have done terrible for years now. 5 years, I'd say. But have you looked at this year? Talk about that. College degrees are the new high school diploma. I got some interesting stats, and you don't have a college degree. I know all about the costs and all that. We'll talk about it. Underfunding pension obligations. We haven't talked about that in years. And it's becoming more and more and more a problem. Why? Because the market's been flat for almost 2 years. We need to discuss this. This could be a big problem. This could be something that could blow up in our face. And so I think it's something that I would like to bring to everybody's attention again. It used to be in the news a number of years ago, underfunded pension obligations. And then the market took off. Okay, then everybody kind of forget it because, well, we'll go. I could get into it already because I'm interested in the topic. And I got a couple of emails, questions that I'm going to use today. What happened in the market? The Dow was up 235, NASDAQ up 63, the S&P up 28. It's trying to recover all the losses it made from the Brexit. And it's getting very close to it. Very close. We had three pretty strong up days after two very steep down days. So we're back where we started the day before the vote of the Brexit. Isn't that interesting? About where we started. That means that the market is still not doing great. But I felt that we might, that Brexit, the 2 days, well, this might be the beginning of a correction, and I can't call that a correction. It wasn't deep enough. It's only like 3%, 4% in 2 days. I mean, it's pretty quick, but, you know, a correction to me has to be 10% or more. That's what I'm looking for. I think that's the normal size correction. We just didn't get it. We're not getting it. We'll see. I don't want to get too excited about the market, but it is pretty buoyant right now. Our program is brought to you by our company, KPP Financial. We have a variety of carefully designed investment programs. I met with a number of people the last 2 days and discussed each one of them. And these are designed to reach, you know, a range of what people need. Do you need money in retirement? Do you need steady income? Or do you need growth? If you'd like to know more about our program, just click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. I really encourage you to join and learning process here. I think you'll find it beneficial. You can read and listen, ask questions. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now.
Hello, I'm calling in on a question with the stock Nike. Looking to get in, what do you think would be a good dollar point now? And wanted to see what your thoughts are on the stock and the future. Thank you.
Nike is one of those big blue chip stocks that's going to be around for many years. It's a very healthy company, very low debt. It's a very good company to hold in your portfolio. Nike, NKE is the symbol. And, you know, markets high-quality athletic footwear, apparel, equipment, accessories, and they do it on a worldwide basis. Now, you always want to buy a big blue-chip stock. This is a $93 billion company at a discount. And Nike is not selling at a discount. Even though it's come down off its high of 66, 67, down to 55, got as low as 52 in the last 3 days ago, that's still not cheap. It's going to make $2.78. Next year, that is a 15% increase over this year. So $2.78, what would be a normal PE? Well, it's never traded in the last year below 17. So what is 17 times $2.78? Well, it's going to be, what, high 40s? That would be where you'd want to buy it, in the high 40s, in my opinion. And that's, I would wait for it, too. I wouldn't try to chase it. I'd wait for it. It's a good, solid company. Really good. But you want to buy it on a discount. The specifics of retirement differ for everyone, but the broad goal is to have the financial freedom to live your life in comfort, whatever that means. You want to be comfortable. More than ever, you need an executable plan, a plan that can grow and protect your assets. Do you have questions about how to do that, how to construct one? 888-99-CHART. You can reach me right now directly. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time every Monday through Friday.
Roll
Roland, Mountain View. How are you doing, Roland?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the call.
Oh, I'm interested in ETFs just like everybody else.
Now, perfect. Okay.
Is it really tough to try to build a portfolio that's balanced out of ETFs?
I don't think so, Roland. I think it's really easy these days. Why? Because if you go to that ETFconnect.com, they break the ETFs down by industries. And they have ETFs in every industry, every market, every country, almost every country anyways. They have ETFs by continents, like the EFA, you know, the Eastern European and Asian market. You can buy an ETF that covers the whole span.
Well, what about their high beta or low beta? Cap, medium?
They actually have.
they have
ETFs that just do small cap or mid cap or large cap. Mid-cap growth, small-cap growth, small-cap...
Well, they're all segregated.
Borland, if you go to that ETF Connect or any one of those other options, you'll say, man, I can split these things any way I want. I can buy 10 shares here, 10 shares there, 10 shares, or 100 shares, 100, 50 shares. I can spread it all around, and I have great diversification with not a lot of money.
And what's the minimum to get in?
You can buy one share.
Well, I mean, if you want to...
Well, you say, what the minimum? You could buy one share. I wouldn't do that, but
no.
You could. It depends on your trading costs. Let's say your trading cost is $10 a trade. Well, you know, I would like to buy enough to make it, you know, I don't have to double my money just to break even on the ETF. So for me, you know, I think you need to have about $25,000, and then you can get a very good spread, and the trading costs won't kill you.
Okay.
All
right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Roland. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Bill in Petaluma next. How you doing, Bill?
Good. Good afternoon, Steve. If memory serves, you used to work in the insurance field. So
correct.
I wanted to get your take on MetLife, and if you think it's a worthwhile stock, what might be an entry point on that?
Okay. MetLife, Bill was talking about ancient history. Out of college, I worked for the insurance industry for like 9 years or so in New York City. Global provider, MetLife, global provider of life insurance, annuities, employee benefits, and asset management services. That's what these life insurance companies do now. They don't just do life insurance. They're into financial products because that's where the money is. You know, there's more money than that. You know,
sure.
They're a money house. It's going to make $5.44 this year. That's 12% more than last year. And then another 10% rise for next year. So about $6 a share. It's a $39 stock, so that should tell you right away that it's not too expensive. But this is what I was talking about the opening show. You got to compare its own history. It has a 5-year P/E range of 5 to 12. And so what is the P/E ratio going to be at $6 a share and a $40 stock? So it's getting down there close to the, 7 area, 7 P/E, which is where you want it. The return on equity is only 8%, which is pretty low, and that's why the stock is pretty low. In other words, they don't make a lot of money per dollar they bring in, but they do pay a very healthy dividend, 4%.
Yes, they do.
So this, and from a technical point of view, they're bounced off a double bottom around $36, $37, today at $39. I think this is kind of where you would want to buy it, Bill.
Okay. Is it possible to use that term value trap? It isn't a value trap by any way, shape, or form, is it?
I would say no, because a value trap is something where the business model or something wrong with the business is falling apart underneath, you know, that you can't really see. So the stock gets really, really cheap, and it looks really cheap because the earnings were good last year. The earnings look pretty decent this year, but something's wrong with the business model some way, or something's wrong fundamentally. They have too much debt. There's something else going on. Well, MetLife doesn't have that. So, no, it would not be a value trap.
Okay. Yeah. And that yield is what attracted me. Also, the drop that it incurred during Brexit.
Yep.
You know, which it's made up already.
Yeah.
So,
and you can probably understand why, you know, because remember the Brexit, London is a big financial hub. And, you know, of course, you're talking about MetLife, a financial company, really. It's a life company,
certainly,
but it's financial, you know. So,
yes.
Looks pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call. MetLife, M-E-T is the symbol. Let's go to Huey, San Jose. How you doing, Huey?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for the call.
Okay, I have a question. I'd like to know, because I missed to buy the stock on Monday when market was down. So I'd like to know, is right now, since already rallied for 3 days, is good timing to jump to buy ETF fund for as a long-term holding, or I can wait for later?
I think right now you should wait.
I think
you'll get a better entry point later on in the year. I'm a little concerned this 3-day rally that took us all the way back to where we started before the Brexit. I'm a little concerned that it won't keep going. I just don't think that will happen. So I think if I look at the volume of this rally, there was a lot more down volume at the Brexit than there has been up volume to recover. So that's not necessarily a good sign. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Huey. Just be patient. You'll get a pull back sometime in the next few months, and that'll be a time when you get in. Okay. Now's the time to call with your question or share your investing experience. I'd love to talk to you. Call our anytime line and record your question, 888-99-CHART, or send a note to me directly. Click on Contact Steve on InvestTalk.com.
We thank you for subscribing. When retirement seems near rather than in the distant future, that's when most of us begin to get serious, creating a serious plan. When that day arrives, laying out a credible roadmap for success involves addressing your needs, identifying risks, and finding opportunities. If you need help with that, we're here for you. Use our anytime line at 888-99-CHART. Let's talk on InvestTalk. Continue now with this Thursday, June 30th, Invest Talk. Don't save your questions, or maybe you'd like to share your investing experiences. Join in right now. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Michael, Half Moon Bay. How you doing, Michael?
Okay, I don't know a whole lot about this subject, so okay. I think it's a pretty good question, though. I worked for a company. I invested in my stock. I bought it outright when I left the company. It's still a privately held company. It has not gone public.
Okay.
But it was just recently purchased by a blank check company that's already public.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that means for me and my stock. I got a letter saying that they were going to purchase my stock back from me, but I was kind of holding out till it goes to common stock, but I'm not sure if I'm capable. It doesn't sound like they're going to let me do that.
No, since it's a private company, it's not a public company, you don't have much say.
Okay.
They're going to buy all the stock. Question in your mind is, what are you going to buy it for? How much?
Well, they made an offer to me, but I'm like, I don't know that if I have an opportunity to go back and say, no, I want to sell you it for this much and see what they say.
If your stock has a voting power, do you know if it does?
I don't think I have enough for a voting power, no.
Yeah, see, most of the voting power is probably held by the insiders, the people who...
Exactly.
Okay, and those guys are going to make the decision. You are not.
You're
going to have to follow on their coattails. Unfortunately, the option that would be left to you is filing suit as a minority shareholder.
Right.
You feel like you're getting a shaft, and the majority shareholders are getting the benefits, and you're not.
Right.
That does happen, but it's extremely expensive, and you don't want to go that route.
It's a nice little chunk, and I'm happy, but I had absolutely different plans for that money.
And so they messed it up for you.
Well, I mean, at least something happened with it. It's been a while. You know what I mean? I feel good about that. Now, what would you think about taking some of that money and buying it into the company that just bought?
If you feel that the fundamentals of the company, of the shares that you own, if you feel that's really going to benefit this new company and it's really going to accelerate this new public company's earnings, then yeah, that's a good way to go. If it's so small, the company that stock that you own, if it's like 5% or 10% of the company that's buying it, then it will make no difference. You have to look at the company that's buying it to make sure that they're solid.
Right, right.
So take a look at the relative size and what it really is going to do to their earnings.
Okay.
Well, good luck with it, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. You were very helpful. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for calling. And I got a couple of email questions today, yesterday, last night, from Sue, Invest Talk question. Steve, please give an opinion on the Guggenheim Equal Weight S&P ETFs, especially, and then she gives a symbol, RSP and RYT. which minimizes its holding in Apple. Thanks. I enjoy the benefit from your podcast, too. The reason, equal weight indexes, equal weight, the S&P 500, means that each stock in that S&P 500 is equal in size as far as the value of the companies. Because remember, indexes can be market cap weighted. And what that means is the big companies have more influence of the price of the index than the smaller companies. Now, of course, the S&P 500 is 500 largest companies, so they're all pretty good size. So she said this would help minimize the holdings in Apple. Well, Apple still will be equal weight, so it does minimize the effect of the overall index. So you're right in that. I like it. I don't have a problem with it because these are all big companies. It's depending on what you want. So yeah, I don't have a problem with it. Thanks for the question. I appreciate it. You really can't assemble and maintain the right retirement portfolio for you if you don't have a clear and honest understanding of your own personal risk tolerance. We talk about this a lot. How much are you comfortable to lose? Everybody wants to gain. Everybody wants to make money. How much are you comfortable to lose? And this is what our little risk analysis tool that I keep telling you about, this is what it does. It measures your comfort. How much are you willing to lose? If you can gain this much, how much you're willing to lose? Because taking risks, the more risks you take, the more possibility of gains and the more possibility of losses. What range are you comfortable with? So you can go to investtalk.com and take the little questionnaire, and it will tell you, it will give you a score, and we'll tell you what that score means. So just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Now, InvestTalk Real Estate. Chevy Akison, real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about upgrading your house before selling.
Now, Chevy, a lot of sellers have kitchens that might be outdated, bathrooms that might be outdated, different parts of their house that need work, right? And generally, I think a lot of people have the question, should I fix those problem areas of my home? Or should I just sell it as is? And what type of fixes are usually worth the expenditure?
It's a great question, Justin. So, what I always tell people is what sells homes are kitchens and bathrooms. Obviously, generally speaking, the wife is making the decision. So the kitchen is going to be what really sells. The master bath is also very important. With that being said, I work with a lot of flippers that we buy homes both on the market as well as go straight to the trustee sale. And what I've found, though, occasionally to get the best return for my flip investors, sometimes we find that the neighborhoods really don't require a remodeled kitchen or remodeled bathroom because they're so popular and the range from the high to the low isn't that large. So it's extremely neighborhood specific. Sometimes my investors have a much better return, and so would a normal seller, by just leaving the kitchen and leaving the bathroom, knowing that the neighborhood is going through maybe a rejuvenation. And so the older homes are selling for enough of a premium that by the time you put in the money for the kitchen and bathroom, you're not getting it back out.
So you're saying a lot of buyers are redoing it themselves anyway, so they're not really going to care.
And they'd rather have it done their own way. So as a result, I'm seeing take a neighborhood, for example, that's selling for $1 million. A remodeled kitchen, a remodeled bathroom on the low end is going to cost, probably close to $50,000. So if you can sell that same home for $950 to $970 and let someone do it on their own, save the time, save the effort, save the headache, and don't do it. If the range is $800,000 to $1 million, you can spend $40,000 or $50,000 and then get $1 million versus $800,000 to $850,000. Then we'd probably advise them to do it if they have the money and they have the time and want to put in the effort.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now, what about exterior features? Thinking of painting the house, maybe putting a new roof on. What if your pool is old?
Yeah, some neighborhoods, a pool home will actually go for a premium. A lot of times the pool home doesn't have any premium because the community has a pool. Pools, generally speaking, aren't the best investment for a property. It's very neighborhood specific. But one thing that is true is in most neighborhoods, buyers don't have that much of a vision. So you need to show them the vision. So a lot of times you do need to do the kitchen and bathroom. But like I said, there's exceptions. But that's why it is important to have a professional truly analyze the market and tell you, is it worth it to do it or not? Someone that's selling potentially hundreds of homes, if I was only doing four deals a year, I'd be nowhere near the advisor to my clients as we are today because we buy and sell so many properties.
If you have a question, 888-99-CHART is the number to call or contact KPP's own licensed realtor and financial advisor, Justin Klein. Click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Serena in Napa Valley, how you doing? Or in Napa, how you doing, Serena?
Hi, I'm a younger person. Okay. I recently worked at a job where they offered me the benefit of having a 401k plan and company stock.
Great.
However, I've left that company in order to pursue higher income so I could support myself a little better.
Oh, that's always a good thing.
Yes. And now I have these teeny little balances, and I'm not sure if it would be beneficial to me to keep it, roll it over, get a check, or what I should do.
Do not get a check, okay? Because then you'll have to pay taxes on it immediately. And you probably got a higher paying job, so you might be in a higher tax bracket. You definitely don't want to pay taxes on it. When you say teeny, are you talking about under $1,000?
Yes, I've got about $500 in 401k and about $300 in the company stock.
Okay. The company stock, is that in the 401k?
Looks like it.
If it's inside the 401k, I would probably sell those stock, and I'd roll that 401k into an IRA.
Okay.
It's very simple to do. You can go to a bank, you can go to Schwab, you can go to Fidelity, you can go to almost any one of those and say, hey, I have a 401k, I'd like to roll into an IRA, and they'll go out of their way to help you.
Does it cost anything to do that?
Free. Well, let me rephrase that. Sometimes the 401k people charge like $30 or $50, but most of them do not. It's generally free.
Okay.
Then when it's in the IRA, you can put it in a money market, you can buy a mutual fund with it, you can add to it up to $4,000 a year, and if you're young, and you do sound young, it would be wise to add to it. Does the new company offer 401k?
No, not yet.
Okay. So then I'd roll it into an IRA, move it out from where it is today, and just, you can go to the bank and put it there if you wanted to.
Okay.
You know, use CDs. But don't take it. Because, you know, this is your retirement. You're going to build it over the years to come.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Thank
Bye.
You. And it really, it's $5,000, everybody, not $4,000, $5,000. I misspoke there. For your IRAs. And if you're, you know, you get a catch-up if you're older, but she's young, so it didn't really happen to her. I wanted to briefly talk about REITs. You know, everybody's reaching for yield. We all want better yields, and REITs are now a sector in and of itself. REITs are real estate investment trusts. And the main reason anybody buy these is to get into real estate some way and get high dividends. You're looking for the dividends. You got to be careful. You don't get too keen on private REITs. I hear a lot of advertisers now about, you know, buy into our private REITs. We're going to pay you 7, 9% every year. It's a private REIT. Why don't I like private REITs versus public REITs? Well, because as a private REIT, you are a limited partner in there, and the general partner has complete control. And if he wants to be a crook, take the money, borrow more money to buy, and then borrow money from a bank, pretending he's going to buy property, and then skedaddles with the money, you're on the hook. That's income to you for that borrowed money that you never got. So be very, very careful. How do I know this? Oh, about 30 years ago, I did that and ended up not only losing my money, but also had to pay taxes on money I never got, that one from the borrowed money, from the crook who stole all the money. So just be careful. That's why I like public REITs. They don't have that issue. They don't have that problem. And there's different kinds of REITs. You could get industrial properties, warehouses, distribution centers, manufacturing space. You get office buildings, renting spaces to tenants in the building. You can buy retail spaces. And there's lots of subcategories here in the retail, you know, regional malls, freestanding stores, that kind of thing. And then residential REITs, which are apartment buildings, that's normal, that's typical, but also manufactured homes or single family homes. So there's four broad categories: industrial, office, retail, and residential. Where do you want to be? I wish it was simple. It's not simple. You think it is, but it isn't. You just got to make sure you buy the right ones. Now let's try to answer this question that came in via text. I just started looking for the Greek banks. Okay, I just started looking for Greek banks. The two most important that I am looking at is Alpha Bank and National Bank, besides Greek, G-R-E-K, ETF. What do you think about that? I think you should look elsewhere. I think that would be a terrible investment. I would not invest anything in Greece. My personal feeling is I think they're going to go bankrupt. All this money that they've been throwing at, they, meaning the EU, has been throwing at Greece to save them, I think is not going to save them. Because I don't think the Greeks really want to be saved. They want the money, but they don't want to change their ways. They don't want to, you know, get their economy going. They don't want to get serious about tax collection. They don't want to get serious about keeping their budget under control. They don't. They want to stay in the EU, but they don't want to get serious about fixing the problems they have. That's not what they've done for years and decades. So investing in banks, I don't care how cheap they are. Investing anything in Greek, I don't care how cheap they are. It's just not a good place to be. Don't think it's a bargain. It's like thinking a company's a bargain because it's selling for a real cheap price, $1, $2 a share. And you think, well, gee, it used to be $30 a share, so it's cheap. No, $1, $2 a share should put up a little red flag and say, is this company going to go bankrupt? Is that why it's selling for $1 or $2? Maybe it's terrible. That's what I see in Greeks. Okay? I got one more question that came in email, and the person said they can't call because they're in Canada. Well, I don't know. Maybe they can't call the 800 number. What do you think of MDC? MDC. MDC Holdings is a builder, by the way, everybody. He thinks it's a small company, looks fairly inexpensive. MDC is going to make $2.05 this year, $2.46 next year. It's growing 20 to 50%. It's a builder. Its earnings is growing 20 to 50%. Sales are growing about 10, 12%. And it builds single-family homes, detached homes. And, of course, that's the hot area. They pay a 4.1% dividend. And it's an 18 PE, $24 stock. So it's going to be a 10 PE based on next year's earnings. So it looks like it's getting very, very reasonable. Management owns 26%. That's pretty good. That gives you a lot of comfort. And I'm not keen on this area of the market right now. This stock looks pretty cheap, but I'm still not keen on this area of the market. I think our housing is getting a little extended, and I'm not, it's not one of my areas I think we can make a lot of money in. They pay a 4% dividend. That looks pretty solid. So the company is good, but I don't like the return on equity, 5%. That's pretty weak. But it's a good, solid company. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. And we have time for your question before the hour's up. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Let's talk to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
And I was wondering what your thoughts might be for restoration hardware.
Well, I'll be honest, we bought this stock 4 or 5 days ago. RH is the symbol. We bought it for our stock accounts for everybody, including myself. I buy everything for myself as I do for a client. Restoration Hardware, you look at a chart and you go, oh my God, this thing has collapsed. Which it has. It was $100 a share last year, and today it's $28.68. Well, but you got to remember, it collapsed. So the question you have to ask yourself, why? Well, it was making $2.73 in 2016, and this year, they're 2016. So this year, 2017, their fiscal year, they're going to make $1.65. That's why they collapsed last year. Everybody knew that was coming. They collapsed. Next year, they're going to make $2.32, a 40% increase. Meanwhile, all this time, sales are still growing. They're never shrank. They never shrank. They've always grown. Yes, sales have slowed down their growth, but they're still growing. The stock has it's a $28 stock going to make $2.32. Okay, so that's a pretty reasonable price for the stock. So we bought it and we said, well, if it drops below the low, Mike, if it drops below the low it just recently made in the last month, then we get out and we wouldn't lose very much. But it's bouncing up and it was up, 2% today. It was up 4% yesterday. It made up all the losses for the Brexit and more so. So I kind of like it. Mike, I like it. Even though this is a more risky position for us than normal, but this is in our high-risk stock account. We didn't put it in our low-risk balanced income account. So, Mike, I like it, RH. I like the fundamentals.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Now, let's try and answer one of our questions before the hour is up. 888-99-CHARGE is our 24-hour listener line number. Let's hear it.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is John in Virginia. I'm calling to get your opinion on where Treasury yields are and sort of where they're going. The stock I'm looking at is Tango, Bravo, Tango. And I realize that I might be catching a falling knife, but at this point it just seems very cheap. If I were considering holding it for a few years, I'd be curious to get y'all's opinion on the stock. Thank you very much. I look forward to hearing the answer on the podcast.
Okay, this is TBT, TBT and TLT. Their pro shares of the 20-year treasury were popular a few years ago, and no one's asked me about it in a while. TBT is the pro shares ultra 20-year short of the U.S. Treasury. Exchange-traded fund corresponds to twice the inverse performance of the Barclays 20-year U.S. Treasury index, twice inverse. So if interest rates go up, this would go up, and this would go up twice as fast. If interest rates go up. And of course, interest rates have not gone up, even though the Fed raised them in December. Now the Fed says they may not be raising them at all this year. This is your problem. You're subject to what the Fed's going to do. And the Fed, the last few years, has been very untrustworthy. They don't seem to follow through with what they say they're going to do. Last year, if you remember right, all last year, they were supposed to raise the rates. They said they were going to, waited until December, and they raised it once. This year, the beginning of this year, they were talking about how they're going to raise the rate 4 to 6 times. Now they're saying, well, maybe we won't at all. So this is what I don't like about these. You're pushed around by what the Fed. Long term, 5 years, 10 years, probably this would go up because interest rates are so very low. But what if we do like Germany and Japan, go to negative interest rates in the next recession? This thing will keep falling. It's not something I'm too keen on buying because I can't rely on the Fed anymore. They're too unreliable. I don't know if they're telling me the truth or not. Appreciate the call. Thank you. Time to close up for the day. Before we go, a reminder to your... I'm sorry I didn't get to my talking points today. I'll revisit them tomorrow, I promise. So reminder, go to our website and try the risk-free analysis tool, risk analysis tool. It's free. Only takes a couple minutes. Just click on the Invest Talk tab. You'll see it on the main page, right about, I don't know, third down. You'll see it. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, I want to thank you for listening today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.